Absolute Radio Country is filled with the best sounds from Nashville 24 hours a day. But even we can't fit in everything. You'll find a full story right here. This is Country Music Talk, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the world of country music.
We love bringing you the biggest names from the world of country music here on the podcast, so thank you for listening. Remember to subscribe if you haven't already, and that way you'll never miss an episode. And if you're in the UK, you can listen to Absolute Radio Country live and enjoy the No Repeat Guarantee. It's our promise to never play the same song twice during your workday between 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. Right, on with the podcast.
This is the Country Music Talk Podcast from Absolute Radio Country.
Hey, Drake Milligan, welcome back to the UK.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much.
It's good to see you again.
Great to see you.
I mean, you kind of became like a household name, like kind of like that, or it seemed like it with America's Got Talent and all that. Suddenly, it's like you were a star. And what were you expecting when you came here the first time? Did you have any expectations?
Not really. I mean, I have heard that the audiences here kind of gravitate towards a lot of the older stuff, which I do too, which is cool. I mean, and people here love Elvis and Johnny Cash and I do too. So I was thinking, you know, well, there's something I can connect with people on here and is kind of more that more traditional kind of country aspect.
Yeah.
So it was cool to see. I mean, you don't get, it seems like you don't get that kind of old school way of word of mouth in the States as much as here. It's like people legitimately will tell all their friends and then their friends will listen. And you don't really get that, I think, in the States as much.
So, it's different now because you're firmly established in your career and, you know, you've had these big songs that everybody's loving. But off the back of kind of coming out of America's Got Talent, was that a different crowd than kind of you have now? You know, was that people who were just a little bit curious or they'd seen you on TV or, you know?
I was impressed. I mean, just out of AGT, with the gigs we were playing here, that people knew. I figured people would know just the songs I sang on America's Got Talent.
Right, right.
But they knew, like, every song I played on there. Songs that I would consider, you know, album cuts that, you know, are just kind of, you know, just like kind of the deep cuts of the record. That people were singing along to every word.
Oh, yeah, we love a deep cut.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want you to tell us about Billy Bob's.
Yeah.
And the reason I want you to tell us about this is because I see so many country artists, big country artists, playing Billy Bob's in Texas, which, is it called the world's largest honky-tonk?
It is the world's largest
honky-tonk. It is literally the world's largest
honky-tonk. It is the world's largest honky-tonk.
So tell us about the look, because you just played it. That's why I'm asking you. I'm not just saying, hey, tell us about this random thing in Texas, Texas boy.
Yeah.
You played it recently, and it's a big deal to play Billy Bob's,
yeah,
right?
Well, I mean, I grew up 25 minutes down the road from Billy Bob's. And I used to sneak in there in high school. I've been kicked out multiple times you sneak in there and they, you know, you're underage and they, you know, they put the X's on your hands and the first thing I do is go wash those things off and try to sneak a beer somewhere,
scrubbing them off.
So I mean there's a bull riding arena in the honky tonk, you know, kind of in one of the corners you go into. I mean, they have bull riding before every show.
Actual bulls,
yeah.
Not like a mechanical bull,
legitimate bull riding. Yeah,
it's an arena. A big honky tonk. Okay,
they got an arena in there and they've got I mean, it's like a 5,000 cap room. It's a big, but it's, you know, low ceiling.
Yeah.
You know, it's awesome. And they have like a wall of fame, which I'm now on. And it's pretty cool because, I mean, growing up, it's like kind of dreaming of playing on that Billy Bob stage. And there's just such a history. I mean, it's been going since the early 80s. And I recently got to play, this is my, I think, third time playing it. They got to play on New Year's Eve, which the first person to ever play on New Year's Eve at Billy Bob's to open up their, you know, New Year's Eve kind of tradition was Johnny Cash.
Wow. So, I feel like New Year's Eve at Billy Bob's would be rowdy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it was nuts.
It's rowdy.
It was nuts. And we came out, like, we did our whole set, timed it out perfectly. We got to our, just before our last song, which the last song that night was going to be Sounds Like Something I Do. And we got to the song before it, into that. Did our countdown, Happy New Year's, you know, everybody's celebrating, going to Sounds Like Something I Do. And then I sneak backstage, put on a, you know, big old gold jacket and come back out. And we did this, like, I think 28 songs in 20 minutes, like this kind of medley of just a lot of country covers, you know, just every cover we could think of, kind of a huge mashup of all those.
Some Elvis in there as well.
Oh, some Elvis in there, yeah. Yeah, and it was a lot of fun.
So Billy Bob's obviously a bucket list thing if you're a Texas artist or a country artist in general. But so it kind of, you know, on the one hand you got Billy Bob's, and then you got the Grand Ole Opry,
over here, and you've done both.
I actually absolutely have. And I'll tell you what, the Grand Ole Opry, I made my debut shortly after America's Got Talent, you know, right after I put out that record in 22. And then I've gone back, I think, four times since. And what's great about the Grand Ole Opry is when you go back, you start to feel more and more like you're becoming part of that family. You know, it's the backstage hang. Mm-hmm. You get to see country music legends mm-hmm. and talk to them, and they're so nice.
And everybody, the policy backstage is if you have your dressing room door open, come on in.
Oh, yeah.
If it's closed, give me a minute.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you walk around, and everybody's got their dressing room door open.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody's so excited to be there, whether you have played it 100 times or whether you played it. It's your debut.
Well, it's a safe space, I think, for a lot of country music. I mean, I know opera members that just hang out there, you know, nights when
there's free iced tea.
Yeah, exactly.
And popcorn. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. And great lemonade, too.
Yes. Are you a lemonade guy, iced tea guy?
Well, I'll do a little bit of both.
You mix them?
Oh, yeah. A little on the palm.
Oh, yeah. I mix them as well. Yeah. I'm down.
It's good stuff. Yeah. I do the unsweet tea, though. I got to watch the sugars, you know.
I hear you. Healthy. So when you go back to the Opry now, is it kind of like returning home a little bit?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, it's people start to recognize you. You know, the people who work there start to, you know, hey, Drake, and you kind of feel like, oh, okay, you know, I'm part of this.
Yeah, I belong here.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you still have that nervousness before going on stage. You know, it's just such a iconic stage that you kind of, you get the nerves every time. But when you're backstage, it's just... At least for me, I feel very comfortable.
Everybody always asks you about Elvis. Are you a little bit tired of talking about Elvis?
No. I mean, I'm such a big Elvis fan, and he's such a big part of what I am.
Yeah,
and what
kind
I do.
Of where you came from, I guess.
Yeah. Now, when I first moved to Nashville, right after I did Sun Records, a TV show where I played Elvis, I was running from the Elvis thing. I thought, you know, I'm going to go to Nashville, and I'm not going to be the Elvis guy.
Sun Records was a television show in which you played Elvis.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I thought, I'm not going to be the Elvis guy. I'm going to throw that all out the door. And then I just, like, started to become a George Strait impersonator. You know, it's
right.
And Tony Brown was the guy who helped me really kind of connect those. Tony did my first record. Tony played with Elvis back in the day and produced 20 records on George Strait, and along with a million other great records. He really helped me to, you know, he's like, you got to use that stuff. That's part of you.
Use what you got.
Yeah, use what you got. I was, at that point, I was studying Elvis for years and years and years. It's like, Elvis was one of the greatest entertainers ever. You know, why not use that stuff, but also use your other influences, bring everything else in. And, you know, it took some time. It took years to really kind of find that kind of sweet spot where I felt like, okay, I'm not doing an impression of anybody else.
Yeah, but you're
an impression,
being you.
But I'm also doing an impression of everybody all at once. Right, you know, I find certain things I do, or if I'm singing, I'll find certain things I do. Like, oh, that's, you know, that's Ronnie Dunn, you know, or that's Keith Whitley, or even like one of my favorite singers, Leanne Womack, and I try to steal some of her runs sometimes, you know. So
that voice.
You take these influences from everywhere and try to just mold them all together, and before too long, you become your own thing. That's what Elvis did. I mean, Elvis took his influences and his unique influences and put them together.
Well, yeah, I mean, a true artist can be inspired by loads of different people and still make it unique. It's been a real moment for Elvis, like all these films out of Elvis. Every time there's one out, are you like, why didn't you call me?
Well, I actually did. I auditioned for the Elvis movie.
The Baz Luhrmann one?
The Baz Luhrmann one.
Okay, got it.
I auditioned for that. Went out to L.A., auditioned, and, you know, looking back on it, just timing-wise, it was great that I did not get it, because so many things have happened for my career that
it all worked out
that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
If I'd have done. But also watching Austin Butler in that, I don't know that I would have been able to do what Austin. I really don't think I could.
He was great.
Let's
face it, the movie.
It probably should have been.
I was exhausted by the end of it.
It is. It's a lot.
Yeah.
And it was a one watch for me. I watched it in theaters, and I was so overwhelmed by the end of it. I mean, maybe should have called it The Colonel. You know?
Yeah, it was about The Colonel. Really,
it was about The Colonel, and I thought every time Austin was there, you know, I loved the stuff he did, like on stage. You know, when he's directing the band, and that's like, that's the magic of Elvis. You know, and I thought he did a great job of that's such a hard character to play all the way through.
Yeah.
Elvis changed so much in those 22 years. I don't see how I could have done as good or better of a job than he did.
So the debut album, Dallas-Fort Worth, came out. That was 2022 already, right?
That was.
That was a couple years ago now. Congratulations on that. Fantastic. And it seems to be so well received.
Absolutely. I mean, it's so great that I got the chance to release a full record like that right off the bat.
Yeah.
So many artists don't get that opportunity. And the fact that I got to release really a double record right off the bat was really amazing. Because it allowed me a catalog and allowed me these songs that I can go play across the world.
Yeah, you can do a big old set, yeah. You know?
So,
well, we're loving the new single, I Got a Problem.
Yeah.
So good. We play it a lot. Every time I play it, I'm like, Drake Milligan ain't got a problem. He's doing fine. He's doing just fine. But what is great about that is how many people have related.
You know, that song, so that's the first ever song I've ever cut that I did not write.
Oh, right, okay.
It was, you know, I started looking at songs to cut for this EP, and I was looking at my own songs, and I was looking, because I've always wanted to. I co-wrote every song on my first record.
Right.
And that wasn't really... I didn't ever plan on that. I didn't move to Nashville thinking I was going to be the artist that has to write everything.
Okay.
You know, I wanted to be like George Strait. And George has written maybe one or two of his hits, but, you know, not... It's always been outside cuts. And that was just... I heard that song, and it just really connected. I mean, it's written by some great songwriters, Jesse Alexander, Will Bundy, and Justin Wilson. And I heard the demo, and it was a lot different than... I loved the song, but the demo was so different than... my thing.
Mm.
And I thought, man, I love the song. I was like, I told my A&R, Katie Kirkover, I was like, let me go home and just pick up a guitar and learn the song and play it and see what happens. And as soon as I learned it and started playing, I was like, I found my thing on it, you know. And I found that really drive into, and I thought, wow, this feels like my song. And so that was really kind of a special moment for me of seeing, like, okay, I found my thing.
Mm.
I found I'm now an artist that can take a song and make it their own. And that was a really good feeling, and almost as fulfilling as writing a really good song for me.
Well, congratulations on it. It's a fantastic song. And the new EP is called Jukebox Songs. So there's four new songs, right?
Absolutely, yeah, four new songs.
And does this mean that we're leading to an album? Or, I mean, because I never know, because, you know, sometimes, like, people will just release EPs, or they'll release things as they're done, and they push them out, and some people are real album people, and some people aren't. Where are you in there?
I'm always thinking album. Okay. I mean, we wanted to get some songs out, you know, kind of immediately, and found these and loved them and put them out. And I'm always thinking album. I'm that first record, Dallas Fort Worth, I had been in Nashville for 5 years. You know, that kind of took me... that 5 years, and I wrote so many songs during that course, and found some great songs. I mean, you see my notes, it's just, there's so many songs I've listened to, songs from other people. And then it was, you know, that came out in 2022, and I've been writing ever since, you know, every time I'm back in Nashville. So I've got a lot of songs kind of stacked up. So I'm chomping at the bit to go cut another record for sure.
Well, bring them on.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
Come on. Hey, when are you coming back to the UK?
So I'm coming back in July.
Are you?
Actually, and the response has been incredible.
Amazing.
So originally we were just going to play a date here in London, and then in Manchester, and then in Glasgow. And now we're playing two dates. We added a date in London. The ticket sales have been crazy. And we've upgraded the venue twice in Manchester.
Wow.
Now. So now that we're at the O2 Ritz in Manchester, which is crazy. So, and then, yeah, it's just, I think we upgraded Glasgow as well. So... the response has been really cool to see. We did not expect it.
Well, congratulations on all of it, and we'll see you in July.
Thank you very much.
The Country Music Talk Podcast from Absolute Radio Country.
An in-depth look behind the scenes at the world of country music.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. We'll have another dropping soon for y'all, so don't forget to keep it country.
If you enjoy the Country Music Talk podcast, chances are you'll also enjoy Absolute Radio Country. It's the place where real music matters, and we love country music just as much as you do. You'll find us online on the free Absolute Radio app, on digital radio throughout the UK, or just ask your smart speaker to play Absolute Radio Country.